The deadly train attack on the Kaduna Abuja Railway has continued to generate conversations exactly 1 week after it took place. And that will get us talking extensively as we have a former federal lawmaker as well as a former director in Nigeria's top security outfit. Well, lovers of football and the Super Eagles are still reeling from watching their darling team, the Super Eagles, lose out of a place at the 2022 FIFA World Cup. But of course, we would also talk about what is happening right here in Lagos as the resumption of a tour, the Lekki-Ikoyi Bridge, gets underway or has gotten underway since last week. Welcome once again to the newsroom. It's a show where we review some of the biggest stories that have made the rounds in the past week. And of course, stories that we, especially right here on Nigeria Info and our reporters, have covered. My name is Ufoma Igbamono. It's a pleasure to welcome you to the show once again. Good evening, wherever you are. And I've got my co-host back after a 1 week. He ran away for 1 week. Shaku Maku Master.
Hey, I don't even know how to say that in it. He's joined the gang. Makushi.
I haven't joined any gang.
Brilliant Shaku Maku to everyone in Lagos.
How was your holiday?
It wasn't the holiday.
It was what?
It was a mental breakaway.
I know. Let me just even announce here that next week, Algo will be doing this show. Not alone. Most likely, he would have Yvonne or Haifo joining on the show because me, I'm going on my own mental breakdown or whatever Algo called it. But we're trying to, muster up some laughter here, but it hasn't been a very great week for Nigeria security-wise. And that's where we will start the conversation this evening. Guys, join us on our Facebook portal. It is Nigeria Info 993. Nigeria Info 993. We are streaming this conversation live there. You could also join us on YouTube. It is Nigeria Info FM. Well, let's get this party started quickly because, of course, we will be talking about last week, Monday night, where a terrorist attack on passengers occurred on the Abuja-Kaduna Railway. Well, as of today, here's what we know. We know that 8 persons have been confirmed dead. We also know that the NRC says 22 persons have been reported missing by their relatives. We also know that the number of safe passengers has also risen to 186, Aogo.
Absolutely. And then we know, too, that 51 passengers on the manifest are either switched off or unreachable since Tuesday morning. And then 35 phone numbers on the manifest are ringing, but no response from the other end. So you have that put together. Then you have 60 phone numbers on the manifest when called responded non-existent. All of this information is from a statement by the managing director of the Nigerian Railway Corporation, Fidet Okiria.
Well, to make sense of all of these information we just gave you, we have a federal lawmaker, Senator Shehu Sani, joining us via Zoom all the way from Kaduna. Senator, very good evening to you. Do we have Senator Sani right here on the line? Okay, let's introduce our other guest, who is, of course, a security expert and a former deputy director of the DSS, Dennis Amakri. A very good evening to you, sir. Welcome to the show.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Okay. While we try to connect to, of course, the senator, let's start this conversation with the former deputy director of the DSS. Well, sir, a lot of Nigerians have actually blamed the persistent terrorism we've witnessed all across the country on a lack of or little intelligence amongst some security operatives. Do you agree with this assessment?
No, I don't agree. There was a lot of intelligence given out to policymakers. And of course, if you listen to the even Kaduna State Governor, he said it, that the DSS had been able to even penetrate that camp where they were even listening to them, and then of course giving him some information which is private to. So there was no lack of intelligence. And then, of course, we are just worried that with all the intelligence, what happened? Why can't we execute, you know, this problem and put it behind us?
Mm.
And I think that's what we're going to discuss.
Okay, well, the Kaduna State Governor, you talked about him now, Nasir El-Rufai. He says himself and his Northwestern governors, you know, might be tempted to call in mercenaries to solve the security situation. Do you think this is the way to go?
Well, number one, he's not the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. I don't know if he knows strategy. If he wants to do that, I think he has to do it in conjunction with the federal government and, of course, with the military, because he cannot just read some books or maybe watch some movies and think that he can invite, or a group of people can invite mercenaries to come into the country.
Mm.
But if he presents his case properly to the National Security Advisor and the military people, and then they put their heads together and say, okay, the way to go now is to go get mercenaries, fine. The important thing is to solve this problem. And I think the governor is in a very good position to solve the problem.
Well, he did actually make that statement. He made that statement, you know, after visiting the president. And some, you know, personalities have suggested that if the governor, you know, after meeting the president, can as well make that kind of a comment about mercenaries, then maybe, just maybe, it's either the presidency has nothing to do anymore, or he's helpless.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think something is really going on that is outside the purview of the public.
Mm.
A lot of things are going on, you know. So one thing on our own part is to watch. We'll watch outside and see what is going on, the developments that is going on. And if they are derailing, we should be also be ready to make our voices known, because this thing has gone to such an extent that everybody is trying to find a solution to what is happening.
Okay, while we're still trying to connect to the Senator Shehu Sani, it looks like we'll be with you for a few more minutes. Over the weekend, Friday precisely, we saw the Imam Nuhu Khalid, you know, who did, he was quite, you could feel the anger in his voice, you know, when he voiced his frustrations. But of course, he was actually quite lucid with his comments. Well, the latest news we're hearing this evening, the Daily Trust is reporting that, the National Assembly Mosque Zone E have actually sacked him. You know, earlier the report was that he was suspended, but the Daily Trust is reporting that he has been sacked now. Well, on Sunday, that's yesterday, the General Overseer of the Redeemed Christian Church of God, Pastor Enoch Adeboye, you know, also gave his own thoughts and talked about how you can't go to Kaduna now by road, you can't go by air, you can't even go by water. So we're in a big conundrum. At the end of the day, how do you think we can get out of this situation, knowing that, of course, elections are coming up in a matter of months?
Well, thank you for that question. And I might want to remind you that there is nothing different from what the digital imam said that is different from what Pastor Adeboye said. They all said the same thing, you know. But you see that, you know, that is the problem with us. Our kind of democracy is one that, of course, the rights, the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, which is enshrined in our constitution, is not being carried out. And then people believe that you cannot challenge people in government.
Okay.
You know. In yes. some countries, you can actually sue the government, you know. If there is anything wrong with any government department, even the United States, you can sue. And you as a citizen can say what is bothering you. And if I listen very carefully, the man himself blamed himself that he has failed.
Yes, he actually did.
Before he mentioned other sets persons. Of people that have failed.
Mm.
And of course, what he's saying is not a new story. It's something that everybody knows about. But for them to go ahead and say that he should not say what he said or muscle him, I think it's against the freedom of speech.
All right, Mr. Macri. A bit of a pause because we've now connected with Senator Shehu Sani. Good evening to you, sir, and welcome to the newsroom on 99.3 Nigeria Info FM Lagos.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, quickly, we will get into the thick of the situation. We would like to know what exactly is the security situation right now in Kaduna?
Well, since the abduction, the attack and the abductions and the trains, there have been some level of appreciable presence of security, especially in Kaduna area and the road between Kaduna and Abuja. But that has not stopped the kidnapping. Because even yesterday, they raided a village that is called Jere, which is just next to Abuja, bordering in Kaduna State, and abducted a number of families, including some Almajiris. So the bandits remains invincible. Security are not taking the war to the camps of the bandits. And despite that, the IG of police said the road is safe for people to use, people are still very skeptical. Nobody is going to risk his life in the sense that these kidnappers, they move in droves of 200 to 300 to 400 and 500 on motorcycles. And up to now, people have not seen any action taken in terms of making sure these people are decimated. If you say you bomb the camp of terrorists or you bomb the camp of bandits and you have killed scores of them, let us see physically the corpses of those you have killed. But what has always happened is that when bandits kill, you will see the result of their disorderly act. But when our security says they have launched attacks on their bases, you just read it without any evidence of this is what is happening. Mm. And now in a serious country, how can over such a large number of people are kidnapped and they are using phone to call the families of their hostages and nobody is detecting them, nobody is tracing this is where they are. Despite all the registration of this SIM card linked to NIN, I just can't understand what is happening in this country.
But
we are tired of all these assurances. We want to see concrete result on the ground that actually action is taking.
But Senator, you would agree that the federal government earlier today did make that pronouncement that starting from today, if you've not registered your NIN, calls will now be barred. Don't you think that's a great step from the federal government to ensure that this complaint you just made now will be sorted out?
Well, you see, you ask them, what has the federal government been doing all these years when this terrorism has reached to this point? At a certain time, they even shut down some communications in some parts of, parts of the country.
True.
You can't make call and nobody can call you. And then you can see that a serious country with the necessary technology as we have here at the National Communication Commission, if you make calls, it's easy to know from where you are calling and who you are calling and who you are discussing and what you are discussing.
Mm.
But this has been going on time and time again. You don't even have to say that you can't make calls, you can only be called. If we can utilize the facilities we have on the ground, they can easily track down these bandits and these terrorists. Now, in our own city, we cannot move 1 kilometer outside of Kaduna, you are in the hands of bandits. We use the roads, The bandits blocked it. We used the train. Now they have bombed it. Our airport now, to even move from the town to the airport, you get into trouble. Nowadays, nobody believes what the government is going to say. Is saying about terrorism.
Senator Sani.
When students of Federal College of Agri-Mechanization were kidnapped, over $200 million was paid as ransom. Right. When students of Greenfield University, Kaduna, were kidnapped, over $200 million was paid as ransom.
Right.
When students of Bethel Baptist High School were kidnapped, the same amount of money.
Right.
Now, parents and family members are simply waiting for kidnappers to call them and pay ransom. They don't want to hear anything about any action being taken because it's all noise.
Right, Senator Sani, thank you very much. And you do confirm the reports about the payment of ransom. I remember having the conversation with Reverend Joseph Hayab of how much was paid for the Bethel children who were abducted. But help us understand this. You've mentioned the carpet bombing that happened for a while. You've mentioned the shutdown of network in certain local government areas. Now the governor of Kaduna State, Nasser El-Rufai, is in the news because he says he's frustrated with the system. He wants mercenaries, if he's given the option, to come deal with it. Do you support the introduction of mercenaries in helping bring security and sanity back to Kaduna State?
Well, it is interesting to see him being converted as one of those who are lamenting on security issues in Nigeria.
Mm.
People like him and his own aides have fought me for years. Each time I stood on the floor of the Senate to speak about insecurity and the paralysis of security in Kaduna State, they fought me, they defamed me, they maligned me, thinking that I'm destroying the image of the president, the government, or I'm destroying the image of his own government or the party. Now they have accepted the fact that their approach to terrorism and banditry has not helped matter. So solution he is giving is simply out of desperation. But I can say it very clearly that it is impossible for a state or any region to enter into an agreement with a foreign power or foreign consultancy firm to bring in machinery. That is contrary to the Constitution of Federal Republic. It's only the federal government that can do that. That's one.
Mm.
Secondly, if we can equip our security agencies, and if we can use the local volunteers and vigilantes who have been working day and night, give them the necessary weapon and support, I believe that they can be able to tackle this. But these bandits are more afraid of vigilantes and volunteers than they are afraid of security agents, because vigilantes are local people. They know where the bandits are. They know how they can get them down. But they don't have the sophisticated equipment which these bandits are using. I said it very clear. If the security agencies and the government cannot protect our ancestral land, they should allow our people to own an equal firepower like that of the bandits and see who owns this land here.
Mm-hmm.
How many of them are there? How many bandits do we have? Out of 5 to 1,000 of them or 10,000 of them, we have hundreds of thousands of people who can fight here. But the security are simply not doing anything. Most times, these villagers will say that we'll make a distress call and say about 500 bandits are passing by. Take action. Before any security agents reach there, it will going to be 1 hour to 2 hours. Before then, they have disappeared into the bush.
Mm.
So if we are interested in fighting this terrorism, fighting these bandits, we must have a proactive security agent that will act without waiting for directive from anywhere. Criminals are criminals. Bandits are bandits. We have to take action immediately.
Okay, Senator Sani, finally on this issue, if you were still a lawmaker, would you vote for a state of emergency, not just in Kaduna, but some of these troubled states in the northwest part of the country?
What can state of emergency do? In Kaduna has the highest number of military facilities in Nigeria. And bandits are launching attacks everywhere. They even launched attacks in Nigerian Defense Academy. Nobody resigned. Nobody was sacked. The Federal School of Forestry Mechanization is next to Nigerian Defense Academy. People are killed. And now, in Niger State here, very close to Zumaro, there is a barrack they call Zuma Barrack. Bandits launch attack and kill soldiers inside the barrack. They launch attack in Jaji. They move. Not even military or police formations are safe. So if you declare a state of emergency, what will it change? After all, it's still going to be the same security agency that will enforce this emergency. What has changed now? If our security agent cannot fight this battle. They should hand over this battle to the masses of our people who are ready to take on these bandits. That's my own solution.
Okay, thank you very much, Senator Sani. And our final question to you, Mr. Makri, where do we go from here? What's the way forward for us?
Thank you very much for that. You see, we are treating the symptoms of this particular problem. We are treating the symptoms because if you want to connect the dots, you will see that the depth of what is going on is very deep, you know, and it is only a political situation that will solve this problem. Sending the military security forces to go and die, I don't think is the answer. And I think the politicians who are responsible for this are very much aware of what is going on. So we will expect them as Nigerians. See, this thing is escalating. And it is escalating because of the upcoming general elections.
Don't you think that's an accusation? Do you have facts to back this accusation or allegations you're making?
Which allegations?
Well, you just suggested that the increase in the terrorism might be as a result of next year's election.
You can see it. What do we call open source intelligence? Mm. Open source intelligence is something you read in the newspapers, something that you hear even on your radio. And the open source intelligence that are available even in foreign media today is that, or you look at the increase of attacks, you find out that this attack has gone higher and higher as we are approaching the general election. Because I think the whole idea of these guys is to make this country ungovernable. Mm. And if we continue to allow them hitting place, moving towards Abuja, by the end of the day, I don't think we're going to have an election in some places. And I think the only way is to look at the root causes, how these people actually come into this country, the root causes, and address those root causes.
All right.
These are not allegations. These are something you can also deduce.
Okay. All right, Mr. Makri, well, time not on our side. We would have to leave it here. Thank you very much. Dennis Makri is a former deputy director of the DSS. And we also had Senator Shehu Sani also joining us via the phone from Kaduna. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us on the newsroom.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, well, that would be our cue to, of course, go to story two of our conversations this evening, which is, of course, right. We're bringing it back home right here in Lagos, where we had the resumption of tolling, the Lekki-Ikoyi Bridge. Well, the Lagos State Government says the reopening of the toll gate cannot be avoided. Yeah, that's what they said. As the company in charge, the Lekki Concession Company, owes both local and foreign lenders billions of naira. It also says it decided to reopen the Lekki-Ikoyi toll gate to reduce traffic flow in the area following complaints of noise and air pollution by Ikoyi residents. Well, Commissioner for Information, Gbenga Omotosho, stated this at a stakeholders meeting organized by the Lekki Concession Company, and that meeting was actually last week. He says the toll would also help divert traffic from the Lekki-Ikoyi Link Bridge to preserve the crucial, or rather the structural integrity of the bridge. Well, his statement actually drew condemnation from stakeholders at the event, who insist that the government is not sincere about the reason they intend to resume tolling. President of the Lekki Estates Residents and Stakeholders Association, Olorogun Emadoye, says toll resumption is unacceptable. That was actually him. There were also other celebrities, Aogo, who talked about the situation there.
Yeah, we got MI, there was Banky W, Mr. Macaroni. They all spoke at that event. They said the reason for strongly opposing the toll
is to prevent youths from taking to the street to express their frustration over the decision by the government. They emphasize that it is wrong to reopen the toll gate when justice has not been served. And the hashtag ends as protest that led to the closure of the gate in the first instance. One of the many issues that have bothered Lagosians is the question of debts. The Commissioner for Information and Strategy, Gbenga Omotosho, who Fuma referred to earlier on, said that the government is yet to refund the money. It's borrowed from both the local and international lenders for the bridge's construction. But by how much? The government explained this in an interview we had on Daily Digest, which is hosted by Jimmy Disu. So let's hear him.
Money to build the road. As of today, Lekki Concession Company is owing about 11.6 billion naira to local lenders and international lenders, including African Development Bank. They are being owed $31.1 million. Apart from that, there are 500 workers working in that place. Most of them young people with young family. For 18 months, they have not had a cover. Some of them have earned half salary, but they need to return to their job so that they can get back to their normal life.
That was, of course, Gbenga Omotosho right here on Nigeria Info's Daily Digest. Well, we've got our correspondent, Emmanuel Onwuka, right here in the studio. Emmanuel, it looks like every week you're always here. You're jumping from Apongbo to Lekki to everywhere. Everywhere you go, this seems that's what you do, Emmanuel. You were at that meeting, the stakeholders meeting last week. Before we talk about the stakeholders meeting, let's talk about the toll gate itself. Okay. You were there last week. You're actually there earlier today.
Yes.
Tell us what's the update like there.
Okay. So the major thing that I noticed immediately as I got there was that 70% of the security agencies agents that were there, or security operatives that were there last week, were not there anymore. So last week we had Black Maria vans, you know, those vans that signify that anybody that come close, you're going to the ban. You know, they were there last week all the way, but when I went there today, they were not there anymore. You know, we had less security operatives standing around the area, safeguarding the place. And we had more traffic flow in that area, so to speak. More persons becoming more aware about it. But the test run was still going on by the time I got there. The test runs were going on. They had some security men standing around. So everything is just like normal. And, you know, that's just how the situation of things there. But one thing is very clear. A lot of persons are asking questions. A lot of persons have become more aware about something going on at the Lekki Ikoyi toll gate. And it might surprise you, some persons I even spoke to today were not even aware about this whole issue that we've been talking about, that have been trending online ever since. They're not just aware at all. And that's like the situation of things there. Some of them I even spoke to that I saw that were getting e-tags. I saw some persons getting e-tags, and I spoke to them and inquired from them, oh, there's a situation going on and you're getting e-tags. Why are you getting e-tags? And they told me that their businesses have to run, you know, despite the whole issue. And they just want to be in the middle. They don't want trouble for themselves. They have businesses that, you know, they have to shuffle from the Lekki down to the mainland. And this is like the best route for them. So it should not affect their business. They have to be effective. If they can't start sending emails or messages to their customers and saying, oh, because of the tolls, we have to take alternative routes, and then we arrive late at the destination. Let's take, for instance, you know, delivery guys, you know, and some other persons that have to make use of that road. Yeah.
Right. Ever since you had that toll protest happen, 2011, I think, if I'm not mistaken, you've always had tension in that area. And I can imagine it's one thing for those who are on the road not to be aware, but those who were in that stakeholders meeting were definitely stakeholders.
Yes.
And they had their emotions running high there. Give us an idea of the things you had there.
So, yes, emotions really ran high that day. Mm. I remember there was a brief altercation between the Commissioner of Transportation and the stakeholder who identified himself as a previous or a former commissioner in Lagos State here. And he was very, after they gave their own thoughts on the issue, and the commissioner responded to them and told them that, okay, we've heard you, we're going to get back to the governor. And he stood up and was like, Is that all? Like, is that all? Is that what you're going to tell us? And, you know, everybody had to start telling him, Oga, calm down, Oga, calm down. Like, people's emotions were running high.
Yeah,
and people came,
I can understand.
They came prepared. I feel that the commissioners were very overwhelmed at that event because the responses that they were giving, the statements they were making showed that, you see, these guys, no.
I heard the voices of, you know, the guys there when the commissioner talked about, you know,
noise pollution and environmental pollution from Ikoyi residents were one of the reasons why.
And then everybody was like, whoa, where did that
like,
come from?
Like, we don't matter. Like, only Ikoyi residents matter.
The noise pollution and the environmental pollution, one of the reasons for the reopening.
That was one of the key things they said.
Ironically, it took me back to my days in school where we had highway engineering and transportation planning. And the reason for the toll gates was so that you could prevent combustion from happening. Unfortunately, the congestion that happens at the Lekki Ekpe Expressway and on the Link Bridge is the reason why you should not have tolls from the planning circle, because they contribute also to the pollution that happens, unfortunately.
Okay, we would have to leave it at that. Let's move on our final topic of the day, and it has to do with Nigeria's Super Eagles crashing out of the 2022 World Cup. Nigeria will not be in Qatar. That's not news, except maybe you are in planet Mars or planet Jupiter. Ghana's Black Stars forced us to a goalless draw in the first leg about 10 days ago or thereabouts, and then came to Abuja last week and held us to a goalless, or rather, a 1-1 draw. That meant that, of course, Nigeria were knocked out of the of qualification on the away goal rule. And we have our Nigeria Info correspondent, Serafina Napoleon, joining us right here in the studio. Serafina, a very good evening to you.
It's not a good evening, Foma.
It's not a good evening.
You literally dragged me to this studio.
Well, Serafina, before you start complaining, let me also welcome veteran journalist and the publisher of ACLsports.com. He's my Egbon. It's good to see him joining us via Zoom all the way from the UK. Calvin Onwuka is his name. A very good evening to you, Calvin.
Good evening, Foma. Good evening, everybody in the studio. Hi, Fina.
Hi, Uncle.
Well, can you stop all that pleasantry? We do not have so much time. Guys, quickly, it's been like a week now since the Abuja disaster. I would just like to hear quickly from you guys how it felt like after the final whistle in Abuja last week. Let me start with you, Calvin.
Actually, to be honest with you, it was at halftime that I realized that this won't work.
You don't be.
It was a halftime. I spoke to quite a number of people at halftime. I asked them that I don't know where we're going to get this goal from. I just looked at how we were playing, and I didn't see a rhyme or reason to the way we were progressing the football. And we were probably just going to hoping on Osimhen locking out and just something deflecting off somebody and going in. But in terms of coherent, cohesive attacking football, there was none coming out on the day. It was actually very depressing. It really was, because you could see as you watch the game, you could see that, wow, these boys actually have no idea. There's nothing that was told them that this is how we're going to go about sorting out this problem that Ghana have already posed for us with their away goal.
Serafina, what about you?
At halftime, I was happy. Thinking that probably the second half we're going to see something different, but the second half was totally worse in terms of performance, because I remember at some point Victor Osimhen was good in the air as a proper positioning in terms of the number nine. He was dropping down to the midfield to go pick up the ball and try to create passes. And when you see your top nine, whose job is to convert the goal for you, leaving his designated position to drop down to the midfield, then you know there's a big problem. We couldn't even there was no transition from the midfield to the final third. It was really, really bad. And the changes from the manager also did not help. How do you explain that you have three strikers on the pitch at some point, and you now start asking yourself who's going to create for these strikers. Mm. So they did not really play to the strength of Victor Osimhen. We know Victor Osimhen is good in the air. He knows how to hustle for the ball and all that. But on that day, nothing just worked out for the team.
Okay.
All right, nothing worked out. Nothing worked out in the field and even out of the field. And Calvin, you had that horrific incident we saw after the game where properties were vandalized. You had a CAF official, Joseph Kabongo, died after a suspected heart attack. I mean, Serafina, you're there live, so you saw this whole thing play out. Yeah. So we'll come to Calvin, who watched also TV like the rest of us.
He was at the stadium. I have a clip of him. He wanted to cry.
Who wanted to cry? Calvin.
Calvin, yeah.
Okay. Which one will go first? Age before beauty. So I guess, Calvin, you go first then.
You know what? I think we've been very unfair on the Abuja fans. When the at the final whistle, the first thing that the fans did, the first mistake was one of the somebody was able to break through the doors and came through, and he was allowed to go and take photos with Ahmed Musa, I think he was. And then after that, a lot of the fans got onto the pitch. I insist, they got onto the pitch not with the aim to vandalize. They were doing knee slides. They were taking photos of themselves on the pitch. Of course, it got rowdy because more and more people got onto the pitch. However, things took a downturn when this the most incompetent set of incompetent people in our society, the police, fired tear gas. It was as soon as they fired tear gas that all bets were off, because that was when the guys now got angry and then they started to destroy things. Before then, there was no destruction taking place. I was actually observing everything that was going on, and I was thinking, look at these boys. So in all of this defeat, what people are happy about is that you're sliding on the pitch and taking photos, taking selfies with each other, being on the pitch. It was as soon as the first tear gas canister was fired that I think that got them annoyed, and they started taking away some of the posters and all of that in the end. So it got rowdy from there on. Mm. To be honest, the whole system of crowd management in the stadium was pathetic. It was disgraceful. There's nobody in this. The people who were in charge, they should not be allowed to govern. They should not be allowed to arrange children's party again. Not to talk of arranging a football match. It was. We're fortunate. I'm telling you guys, we're so fortunate that a stampede did not start in the stands.
True.
If he had, we'd be talking about hundreds dying on the day. It was disgraceful.
Serafina?
Yeah, quick one. You mentioned something about when the tear gas was released. That was when they ran onto the pitch. Even when they ran onto the pitch, they didn't even go for it. They didn't touch the visiting side, talking about the players from Ghana on that particular occasion. The reason why the players had to run for safety was because the crowd, you needed to see how they rushed onto the pitch, because everyone was trying to run because of the tear gas.
Yeah.
So that scared the players. They didn't go at the players. The players had to just leave the pitch on that particular occasion to avoid anything. And even when they started destroying properties, at first they didn't even touch the seats that were allocated to the Ghanaian players. They didn't touch their stand. They left there and went to the Super Eagles side. That was when they started destroying things. As regards the tear gas, I personally think there was no need for that. Because the first person that ran into the pitch just went, I was seeing him, he went with his phone and just stood near the Super Eagles player
to take a selfie.
And the Super Eagles player was there. He took the selfie with the young man. He didn't even push him away. He took the selfie. Then after that, other people saw him that, we can actually take pictures with these players.
And that was when all hell lost.
Yeah.
Okay, unfortunately, time not so on our side. So, Calvin, I'll ask you this quickly. What is the cost of Nigeria not qualifying for the World Cup?
Because we have the worst NFF administration ever in my lifetime. Amadou Pinnick has always been interested in pushing his self forward to get as far as he can with CAF and FIFA. Because that's the only reason why he would go ahead to sack General Raw without having a replacement, a competent replacement in position. For me, it wasn't the sacking of Raw that was a problem. It was not having a competent replacement in place. I checked, like I said somewhere, I checked my the chat I had with somebody who had first told me that Raw had been sacked on the 17th of November. And the first thing I told them was, make I not give this job to Egu. Egu no fit do this job. I said it at that time, that he can't do it. So we need to have a competent replacement for Raw. We didn't have a competent replacement, and that is the main reason why we're out.
In 1 minute, what is the cost for us as Nigerians? What's the economic...
Yola Kazim was saying something at the stadium on that day. I think the cost will be about 102 billion naira.
Hmm.
In cost, 102 billion naira. I remember when England missed out on Euro 2008 and they did a cost analysis of it here. It was huge. It was about 12 million. It was about 12 million pounds they cost it at the time in 2008 for England missing out on Euro 2008.
Hmm.
So it's the same way for Nigeria. Imagine, former, you guys would probably have been in Qatar producing this program from Qatar.
Mr. Calvin, please can you not start that conversation because I'm already getting angry. But that would be that's where we are going to leave it. Thank you very much, Calvin Onwuka, publisher, ACLSports.com, and of course, our troublesome Nigeria Info correspondent, Serafina Napoleon.
I'm not a field reporter. I don't do studio work. They're not coming to this studio.
We also had Emmanuel Onwuka joining us and talking about the Lekki tollgate. And of course, earlier on the show, if you missed it, we had former federal lawmaker, Senator Shehu Sani, as well as ex-DSS Deputy Director Dennis Amakre. It's been a wonderful package on today's edition of the Newsroom, Aogo.
Absolutely. We'll be back again next week.
Yeah, you will be back next week. Yeah. I will be on holiday. My wife will be around, so hopefully I would have fun. But guys, take care. If you missed this show, well, you can watch it again on our Facebook portal, Nigeria Info 993, or our YouTube page, Nigeria Info FM. From me, Ufome Egbamuno, and the rest of the Newsroom, thank you very much for joining us, and have a very wonderful evening.